This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that the alcoholic men and women in our Zoom meeting tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker, and we believe it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too. I must have this thing. Tonight we have I Love AA Michelle W. I see her just about every Sunday at the Gainesville Classic Group, and she's very active in a home group in Buford called Vision for Youth. Without any more to do, I'm going to bring in one of the most loving people I know, Michelle W.
Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic, and by His grace, I'm sober now. My name is Michelle. My sobriety date is 6/1984. That doesn't mean anything except maybe some days I'm over sober. But it's a very interesting situation we have ourselves in with this virus and being at home. And it's kind of hard to break down 35 years in 40 minutes. So I hope that I can bring how big God is in my life through this story. And if there's a newcomer here, I have one white chip by God's grace and a sponsor in the 12 steps. So it's possible. So anyway, I come from an Irish Catholic family, born in Fort Lauderdale. My family is very jovial. My father was an admitted alcoholic, and my sister, I love out last week after a suicidal attempt, admitted she's an alcoholic. But I don't know. My dad, he was a really good guy. My mom and dad, they really loved each other. He had golf fever a lot, so we moved a lot. There was a situation that happened to me, and it was to make my personality be dominant. And we moved to a place called Parma, Ohio, and I was brutally molested there 5 days a week for 9 months. And it absolutely changed my perception of the world. That's not what made me an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic, I believe, by birth. We go back generations in our family. But it was to set me up to see things the way I did and to experience the world the way I did. And so I was divinely separated from the time I was 9. I prayed. I believe in God. I had a God. I had an experience of God. I prayed to Him every day to let me die. So needless to say, life proceeded on. We moved quite a few times, and one of the places we moved to was near the ocean. And what I learned about myself over the years is, instead of looking for a lot of outside things to fill up the space of who I didn't know about myself, I used exercise and making money. I was scared to death to have relationships with people, especially men. Forget it. I've been there, done that, had all the prizes by the time I was 9, so didn't want to be involved in that kind of situation, which separated me from being a little girl and a young woman. I never wanted to drink because I didn't want to be like my father. Early on in my recovery, I had this idea that my father, we butt heads all the time. But I know now that it was because I wanted him to rescue me. But how could he rescue me if he didn't know what was going on? So I barely made it through school. We moved back to Florida, I think when I was 16. And I tried to commit suicide the first time and failed, because here I am. Hadn't had a drink. Well, in our family, the toddlers would get beer, so who knows when I had my first drink. I think I was born with alcohol in my blood. But my family, my mother and father worked really hard to raise five kids. They did the best they could. And so, let's see. When I was a senior in high school, I graduated, and I had this thing with my dad where I had to prove to him that I was okay. Respect was a really important thing to me. I had no experience of love, but I knew what respect felt like. And so I went to New Jersey for the summer, and I worked in a surf shop. And we made boards in the morning and surfed in the afternoon. And I had met my cousin there, and he gave me these outside things called Christmas trees. And I was a real innocent, you know, except for one area of my life. I was very much of an innocent. And I ate them, and I fell into a fever for 3 days in the attic. And you know, every day I prayed to God to die, except when I was surfing. When I was surfing, you can't think when you surf, otherwise you wipe out. Surfing taught me a lot about surrender, about not getting what I want, about thinking when I'm supposed to be completely committed to something, because you wipe out if you start thinking. So those experiences carried for me into my life and into Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I was in this fever for 3 days, and what I remember is my grandmother and my grandfather were standing at the bottom of the bed, and they were arguing about me, and I left my body and went up into the corner of the room, and I felt this incredibly peaceful light come over me. And I thought, all right, this is it. I'm done. And then my older brother came running in the room and threw ice in my face, and I came smacking down into my body. Naturally, I was pretty angry. And that's when I began to stuff the rage and made a decision to just really get involved with making money. And when I got home from that, I naturally was pretty depressed. And not knowing what depression was, it was just a way of life for me. I had nightmares and daymares, and PTSD plagued me all the time, except when I was exercising. You know? So I left town and I toured the country for 3 months, learned how to drink wine, and I was in the Rockies in Kootenay Park up in Canada, and I had this vital spiritual experience to become a hairdresser. So I came home, went to school, and had a big fight with my father. And I know now I was responsible for starting that fight. I disrespected him, and I got kicked out and moved out on the beach and started my life. Golf fever had hit me. And I became very successful. To me, you know, I was a legend in my own mind at 21. I was driving a Mercedes, having a good old time. I still didn't drink much because I did not like the feeling. I can tell you that I never really enjoyed drinking. I did it to live. It was what I did to live. And I believe today that God let me do that until I could survive long enough to get into Alcoholics Anonymous. Because even drinking never took the nightmares or things like that away. But it was the way everybody socialized, so I drank a little bit. I can only drink a little bit in the beginning, and because I was training so much that two beers would just make me feel tipsy. So I would disappear after that. And, I wanted to prove to my dad that I was somebody. And so I drove my little Mercedes out to show him, and naturally he'd been drinking, and he did not approve. So that kind of affected me deeply. You know, discouragement for me is more of an activator than resentment is. Discouragement, I've learned over the years. And so I was really discouraged. And so I decided to get into black market. And so I began to separate my life, become two different people. And I still wasn't using a lot. I was still exercising and working. So, but the inside turmoil was getting bigger and bigger. And in 1975, I had decided to move to Bal Harbour, and I was going to, another golf fever, I was going to open a shop in Coconut Grove, the delusion of alcoholism. And I was driving home one night, and I had a head-on collision. And see, here I had been begging God to die since I was nine, but there was a moment in the car when I took my hands off the steering wheel and I said, "Oh God, help me." So I began to realize what a big fat liar I was. I really got hurt. This isn't the face I was born with. They told me that I wouldn't be able to work the way I worked or train the way I trained. And for about 3 months, I believed them. And I took all the pills that they decided they thought I needed. And I did not enjoy that. It's not my drug of choice. And I just decided, by God intuitively gave me this idea that there was had to be another way. So I went holistic, and it took me about a year to recover and to prove myself, because that's what I was always about. I'm strong. I got to prove it. And I became a competitive roller skater. And my thinking was, competitive roller skaters, I mean, athletes, they don't drink and do drugs. So I stopped doing the black market, and I began to train to skate. And we traveled all over. And at the end of one, that was 3 years of that. At the end of one of the seasons, we were in Idaho, and I was groomed to do in nationals to come in first, second, and third to go to Worlds, and I didn't. I got fourth. So I started. I took a drink, and soon after that, they asked me to stop skating because, you know, my alcoholism didn't stop for those 3 years. So I got back into black market. Only this time, I drank a lot more. Like, my alcoholism was endless. It was just endless. And I still drink by myself, or where I would go, I would take care of the bartender, so two seats beside me were always empty, because I wasn't really a pleasant drunk. I just wanted to drink. That's all. I just wanted to drink and pass the time. So that business got pretty heated, and I got more and more separated. And let's see what happened. It just escalated. You know, I crossed over that line, and one of my customers, I had been cutting this person's hair for, I don't know, 15, 20 years, and I asked them for help, and they were Christians. And nothing against Christianity, but I went to the person that they guided me to go to, and that minister said they couldn't help me because I wasn't saved. And I begged them. I said, "I'll do anything. Please, I need help." And he said no. So for about 3 days, I was dry. And my family are they were very happy drunks, Irish. And so they used to celebrate a lot and have big dinners, my mom had. So I went out and I had dinner with my family, and they just needled me to death. "Have a drink, have a drink, have a drink." And so at the end of the dinner, I had an aperitif, and 3 days later, I was crawling in my house. I don't know if I woke up or whatever. The next day, the hangover was so bad, my hair hurt. You know, it was one of those. And I called my partner, who didn't use. He was just in it for the money, and I told him, I said, "You can't trust me anymore. You got to get this stuff out of my house." Because respect was really important to me. And because of that, he searched and found a place for me to go, and him and my guard came over to my house and packed me up, put me in a car, and put alcohol in my lap and stuff in my hands, and sent me out to a rehab that was called Share. And it was, like, to me, way out west. And I was broken. I couldn't pull off being a hairdresser and doing the other anymore. I couldn't separate it. I couldn't differentiate the true from the false any longer. I very rarely slept. So I was a pretty hot mess. So the guard dropped me off at the curb, patted me on the head with my suitcase, and drove away. And those were the only two people that knew where I was in the beginning. And I walked into the place, and see, by this time, I didn't know who I was anymore. I was who I, wherever I was, that's who I became. So when I was a hairdresser, I was a hairdresser. When I was the other, I was the other. And so I had these things that made me who I was. And so when I got in there, they stripped me of everything. And I was like, man, this is not so good. The fight inside of me was still going on. So they put me in the special care area. Apparently, I must have said something about dying. They don't really take that too lightly. Back then, they didn't give you a lot of drugs like they do now to detox. So I went into this room, and it was just me, and there's three beds, and I went into the bathroom, and I stayed in the shower until, I guess, the next day, and I begged God. I said, God, please, I'll do anything to change. I'll do anything. And so I came out of there, and there was something that was going on. They came in, and they put a big book and a 12 and 12 in my lap and said, write your story. And I'm like, I can't even begin to tell you what I read or what I wrote. And you're supposed to stay in there for 3 days, but I spent 2 weeks in that area, which is pretty interesting, you know. But in that place, I guess it was in the early days when recovery, it really happened from those places. I was fortunate. God just, he's always blessed my life. So they gave me a sponsor. We started working the steps. We had meetings every day. Meetings came in. You weren't allowed to have any kind of caffeine or chocolate, which is my dream. But they were big on sugar. And I'm not too big on sugar, but so life just proceeded on, and we went through the steps. And then I had really low blood pressure, so I used to have to get up in the morning and run before they'd take my blood pressure. And I had this wonderful, beautiful woman. She had this smile and this big hug that used to love on me. And I did my first 4-step with her out of the big book. And it was really a big shift, and I did the 5th step with her. And when I went out to run that day, I began to notice that I could hear the birds, and I noticed the air. I noticed the trees. We were out west, which to me was, oh my God, I'm so far away from the ocean. But had none of those ill thoughts. And as I was running, I realized I didn't want to die anymore. And from that moment on, I was excited. I thought, well, this is cool. I'm going to do this. Now, that doesn't say that I wasn't resistant, because I was. I still had the battle of the lies inside of me. But we continued to do the steps. My family came in, and I tried to make amends to them, and that didn't go real well. But how well can it go when you do your first 4-step in the first 7 to 10 days of your recovery? I did the best I could, and they were really, really supportive. Went through the steps. We didn't have suggestions. That we were required to do certain things. They gave us meditation books. They told us we had to journal. I had to do anger, fear, and gratitude lists every night. Get down on my knees and pray and ask God to help me be willing to be willing. And I did these things because I needed something to be different in my life, just something different, because my best thinking, it couldn't even get me dead, because I had no commitment. So alcoholics gave me a place to have a commitment. So you're supposed to get out of that place in 28 days when you had to come into a room with a board of people and they decided whether you would come or go, and I didn't get to go. Some of us are sicker than others, but they had us make a plan. We had to have a plan on what meetings we were going to go to. Getting a sponsor was a requirement, and when we got out every Tuesday, we had to go back and we had to talk about what was going on in our lives. So, you know, from early on, I took it on. It's a requirement to share with people what I think's going on, which changed moment by moment. So the requirement from the sponsor was still pretty interesting. You know, I had all these ideas, what she was going to be like and blah, blah, blah. But they also always used to say, pray about it for 72 hours. That was the big thing. You pray about it for 72 hours before you make any major decisions. So I prayed about this sponsor, and I was going to 2 and 3 meetings a day. They said 90 and 90, but I was actually fear with skin on it. I was terrified. I was terrified of people. I just, and they smoked back then, so I used to go into a lot of meetings with a bandana and sit on the floor. So this woman came up to me one time, because I went to a lot of literature meetings. I went to big book meetings, 12 and 12, meditation, because I really didn't enjoy the open discussions, because then I might have to share. So I got a sponsor. She came up to me and she says, I've been elected to be your sponsor. I went, okay. And she said, we're going to work the steps. And I was like, well, okay. And so she started working me through the steps, and she was really involved in the home group of Wesley Parrish. And Wesley Parrish was the part of the people that brought Charlie and Joe to Florida. And so I got out of rehab, and a couple weeks later I got hustled into my first Charlie and Joe workshop. And this is what I began to learn AA was about. You know, you carried a big book with you all the time. They used to say, carry a big book with you and put it beside your bed, and sometime you might decide to read it. So, but, you know, they said a lot of interesting things when we first got sober. You know, grateful alcoholic doesn't take a drink. If you want to take a drink, put the chip in your mouth. When it melts, you can take a drink. I believe this stuff. I bought this stuff, you know. In our meetings in Florida, you had to raise your hand. And if they didn't like what you had to say in a couple meetings, they didn't call on you. So I got this sponsor, and we're going to the big book seminar. And she's got me sitting up front with all on the tables with all the big dogs. And you get your own marker, and you get a notebook. It's like, man, okay, I'm in school again. And it just lit my life up. It set a fire under me that I've had good seasons with that passion. And I started sponsoring from the get-go. They used to say, when do you start sponsoring? If you have a day more than the person who asked you, you can sponsor. And I had the big book seminar and under my belt, you know, the knowledge. I didn't have the experience yet, but I was beginning to get the knowledge, and which was very helpful. And I had a sponsor who loved me. And back then, you had to make appointments with your sponsor to call them. So some days, me thinking that I had to call my sponsor at a certain time, that was enough for me to stay sober. You know, I haven't had a desire to drink since I took my first white chip. I've had moments where suicide was an option, but by God's grace, the steps and a good sponsor, I'm still here. So we did that, and they suggest you didn't get a relationship for a year, and I was down with that. That's fine with me. Good. The last thing I wanted, and because I was frightened. So I proceeded to follow my sponsor's musts. So let's see, in the beginning I was living in a house off the beach, and she, let's see, what the first time I was, went to, I don't know, my second or third seminar, and they were going over the third step, and it was curious to me, how do I turn my will and my life over to the care of God that you understand? And I knew for me, I had no understanding of God. I had no desire to understand God. I had experience already with God, and I was okay with that. But I, turning my will and my life, you know, they were describing actions and thinking, but it still hadn't sunk into my heart yet. So I would always run when it was time to eat with people, and I ran home for lunch, and my house had been robbed. And so I was scared, and I was walking around in a circle because I had terrible tics. And I was like, well, I'm going to try this surrender thing. I said, okay, God, I give this to you. I surrender this to you. I surrender my will and my life to you. I'm done. And I felt like, oh, unbothered by the robbery, and went back to the seminar. And in the early days of the seminar, people would share. And they'd share on the steps, and they gave me a microphone, and I shared, and I was like, I don't know how that happened, but that was God. And I had a hard time calling people besides my sponsor. So I did what she told me to do. I prayed about it, and I was on a softball team, and I slid into second base, and I broke my ankle, and I had a gear shift car, so I had to call people to go to meetings, you know. Okay, and I'm like, okay, I'm paying attention. You know, it's just like God was very big. He's always been very big, like, boosh. So she also had me meet her at meetings at all times of the day. I always had to drop everything, and it was Christmas Eve, and Christmas is not a pleasant time for me. It got better when I had my daughter, but so she required me to come to a candlelight meeting, and I was like, okay, I'm coming. I'll put my face on. And so I went to this candlelight meeting, and it was good. You know, I felt good. And I came home, and my house had been ransacked. It looked like the elves had been there. It was like... So I picked up the phone, and I called my home group. By now, I had this incredible home group that we met 7 days a week, 8:30 in the morning. We ate breakfast together, we played together, we went to retreats up into the center of Florida. That was primarily what we did, big book seminars and spiritual retreats. I called these people, and they came over to my house, and my first Christmas, we sat on the floor of all this rubble everywhere, and that's how I celebrated my first Christmas. And then I don't know what step it was, but next thing I knew, my house burned down, and I had to move, and so I moved into the garage of my parents' house, which wasn't too good, because my family still, they still participated in what they thought was fun, and I did not talk about Alcoholics Anonymous to them, because it was not safe. I mean, it was like arrows going through me all the time. It was difficult. And I had moved my shop. It was in the house, and then I moved it to my mom's house. She was so gracious. She let me cut hair there 3 days a week. And so I lived there for 3 months, and man, I journaled a lot, and I went to a lot of meetings, and after 3 months, God blessed me, and I got to move out to a place we affectionately called the womb. It was just a one-room apartment that I lived off the beach. And, you know, there was a big change for me. That was my first year in recovery. It's like it taught me so much. And the people in my home group started teasing me about dating, and I was like, could you just leave me alone? And but they didn't. So I dated a guy for 3 days, said, I'm not old enough yet. And I had a lot of problem with my thinking, because I was still having daymares and nightmares, and the PTSD would be triggered by certain people I sat beside. And And I hadn't a clue what was going on. I just thought I was nuts. And, of course, I was. But I was using the steps. So my sponsor decided after 2 years that it was time for me to go for outside help for codependency, she called it. she was a trip. My first sponsor was a trip. So I went to this woman, and it turns out that this woman was paramount in helping set laws for abused and battered women, and she helped set up homes. But I met her in her garage. I just thought she was this really nice lady. And we proceeded to do the stuff, and I proceeded to do the deal. I spoke a lot in those days in Florida. I didn't go to meetings too much with people my age. I mostly went to meetings, Big Book and 12 and 12 and meditation meetings, older sobriety, long time sobriety, because I felt safe with them. I didn't feel safe with people my age. Most of the people my age I dealt to, so I didn't really want to be around them. But I got asked to speak at a meeting we called the Hip, Slick, and Cool meeting. It was like people my age. And so I spoke at this meeting, and I met this really cute guy. I mean, girl meets boy at Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And we dated. And a year later, we got married. And that was to start a whole new journey of learning all kinds of new things about my insanity and my codependency. And I had the biggest blessing in my life was to have my daughter, Misha. She taught me what it was like to be a little girl. I got to see the world through her eyes, the things that I never got to touch. And it was amazing. She is precious. We're still tight. So it took 7 years before I really woke up to what happened to me. And when I woke up to that, it was like the skin was peeled off of me. It was awful. And so I committed to an outside group. And we did the big work. You know, we did the big work. And I have good tools now for PTSD, but it still comes back. And we had a lot of fun. I had people who were my friends. We did things together. We went on cruises. My daughter was happy. We had a nice little house. And my husband was an executive. And his dream was to be higher up in the corporation. He worked for JVC, and he got an offer to be vice president of the company. So that's how we got to move to Georgia. And that was the beginning of a whole nother world, you know. You take a beach person. Fortunately, I had a truck. I moved to Georgia in a truck, so I kind of fit in. And all the meetings were at 8 o'clock, and people went to the meetings with their husbands and wives, and I was unaccustomed to that. Jim and I went to separate meetings. We just respected our separate recovery, and I carried a big book with me. It was fun. I started some big book meetings, and recovery was fun. You know, I missed the seminars. I missed the spiritual retreats, but they did conventions here, which were hard for me because it was a lot of people. But you know what? I still sponsor. I still sponsor some of the people I sponsored in Florida, and I began to sponsor here in Georgia. And my sponsor in Florida told me, my sponsor in Florida told me to get a sponsor, and I asked four different women, and nobody wanted to sponsor me, and I was like, what's wrong with me? And so I used a man for a while, which I wouldn't suggest to anybody. And finally, I got Grace Robbins. She was a precious, precious lady. And, you know, recovery, we just moved along. We put our daughter in a Christian school, and they did not respond well to her art. She liked to draw dragons, and they said she was from Satan. So I took her out of school and homeschooled her, and that was a lot of fun. I met a lot of different people by doing that. It honed my personal relationship skills. I'm still not good at it. But we had a lot of fun. I was with my daughter all the time, and my husband was a vice president. He wasn't happy, but he was a vice president. And somewhere around, he had 20 years, and it was during that time when they were laying off executives that were in their 50s, and Jimmy had worked in that company for 20 years, and he got laid off, and at the same time his father died. So he had a lot on his plate, and he had his own walk, so he walked away. He went on his walkabout in Colorado for 3 years, and Misha and I, we did our thing, and then she ended up in college. She went to college when she was 17. They invited her to college. Not by anything I did. She's a brilliant child, and she enjoys the discipline that keeps me whole. She's in Al-Anon now, and Jim came home, and we started a business, and I thought all was well, but, you know, I wanted to believe. And he drank, and we got bankrupt, and I went back to work. I worked 3 jobs. That was very difficult. It was a very difficult season, and my daughter called me, and she said, "Mom, I can't talk to you for about a year." She said, "I got a sponsor. I'm in Al-Anon. I'm going to work the steps, and when I'm done, I'll be in touch with you." I was like, "Okay." And she did that. And after a year, she came back home, and we sat in the garage. She made amends to me, and she knew how that word respect was so important to me. And she said, "I love you, and I respect you." And, you know, we talk about everything, and I was going through a season of a difficult time. I realized that when someone goes out that's close to you, there's nothing you can do for them. And some people have a really hard time getting back to the program. And he did. He was brokenhearted, and the disease was eating him up. And I was going to Al-Anon. I was going to AA. I was working 3 days a week. I was like a little bit almost nutty. And she called me, and I must have sounded goofy like I do. And she said, "You know, Mom, he may drink again." And I was like, it just broke open. It helped me separate from being a wife to an alcoholic and an Al-Anon. And I was able, by God's grace, to give him a little more space for his own recovery. And we do pretty good now. It's been difficult at times. This COVID has really helped our relationship because, like, he's stuck with me in this house because he's working, you know, and I have boundaries now, and that's a gift. That's a gift of both programs and good sponsorship. My sponsor today is Rebecca, and she has incredible boundaries with my other disease, the PTSD. When I call her and I'm in one of those spaces, she has such good boundaries. She's so clear and she's so simple that God just blesses me with the things she comes out of her mouth. I'm really big about meditation. I'm really big about, I still exercise a lot, and meditation is really important to me to help my mind stay grounded. And praying, and I write still. I work with alcoholics. I don't work with as many as I used to. It seems when you're older, it just gets different. You know, younger women don't want older women. I don't know what the problem is. But God's not done with me yet, you know. I love AA. I love everything about AA. I mean, this whole COVID thing is a real bummer, but for me, it's been really cool. I get to go to meetings once or twice a day sometimes. I get to do yoga every day. You know, I visit with my husband on his lunch break, and if he's got a problem, he can call somebody else. You know, and it works out. At the end of the day, we eat together sometimes, and, you know, and I love AA. Isolation? No. Sequestered, whatever we are. I do good. I like aloneness. I do really well alone. You know, what I don't do real well with is socializing. It's going to take a lot of work for me to come back and be social again in meetings. I'm going to have to go through the fears that I go through with people, but it's okay. I've done it before. God will help me do it again, you know, and people will greet me, and people will sit beside me like they did in the early days and hold my hands when they know I just can't handle it. You know, I bought this big book. I bought the language in this big book. There's on page 42, it says spiritual principles will solve all of our problems. Not some of them, all of them. That's kind of one of my favorites, you know. And the great fact, the great fact is just this, nothing less, that we've had a deep and effective spiritual experience which have revolutionized our whole attitude toward life, toward our fellows, and toward God's universe. And I have an experience with that today. You know, I don't have to understand God. I have experience of God. That vital spiritual experience that I had in dying, I had in my first four step. And I've had in seasons of my recovery, so many. And today I know that if I look for the miracle, then I'm open to have an experience. It's really up to me and my perception. Some days it's really hard. I wake up and I have that other stuff going on, and you know, I have to tell the people who know me that I'm a little confused this morning. Can you tell me what color is red to you? Where are my feet? Oh, yeah, there's my feet. Who is that used to say that? Just my sponsor used to say, Michelle, look at your feet. And I go, what do you mean? She said, look at your feet. I'm like, okay, that's where you are. So I don't know. I think they give the chips out tonight. It's 8:54, so I better shut up. And with that, I just want you all to know, thank you for being here and being sober. I love AA, you know, buy it, it's a good deal. And thanks, Tim. Bye.
Thank you, Michelle. In 1984, you didn't experience George Orwell's 1984, but you joined a better, brave new world. I'm glad you did. Thank you for sharing your story. Tim Moore is going to give out our virtual chips.
Hey, everybody, I'm Tim. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Tim.
And, Tim, you keep an eye on if anybody raises their hands. I'll go through them one time.
Okay, I'll try to unmute them, but if everybody hits the space bar, you should be able to say a few words.
All right, good. Okay, if anybody wants the white chip, I'm going to give it a shot and try to stay sober or hang in there with you guys for 24 hours. That's the white chip. Does anybody want a white chip tonight? Silver chip is for 30 days sobriety. Red chip is for 90 days. Yellow chip is for 6 months. Green chip is for 9 months. And are there any birthdays that I don't know about tonight? Anybody celebrating a birthday other than somebody I know about?
Yeah, we have one.
Welcome, hey, Lisa. Everybody, my friends. First of all, I would like to say I absolutely love, I love AA, my beautiful friend. I love your story. I admire you so much. Your walk, your honesty, your truth. I love you so much. And I love when we get to sit down and talk. And I surely hope we get to do that sometime soon. So, Lisa Alcoholic, 8 years on the 8th of April. I actually just celebrated tonight. Thank you. And I've met some of you guys from NAVA a couple times, and I was talking to Tim tonight. He suggested I come tonight, and yay, it's a show. Thank you, Tim, for doing this meeting. You are such a man of great service. You're awesome. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa.
Congratulations on that. Any other we don't know about? Any other birthdays we don't know about? Tonight is Tim R's birthday. He is celebrating 13 years. We met at this meeting 13 years ago, and he has done amazing things with this meeting. No need to talk a long time. I hate people that take a long time giving out chips. But I think for all the things I can say about Tim, and I can say a lot of things, from day one, Tim has always reminded me what a gift it is to find sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous. It is a gift, and he has taken care of that gift, no matter what's going on in his life. And believe me, a lot has happened to Tim in 13 years, but I've never seen a more grateful person that takes care of the sobriety more. I've definitely got the best end of this relationship. I've said before, a houseplant could have sponsored Tim, and he'd have been fine. He was that desirous of sobriety, but it's an honor for him to be my friend, and congratulations on 13 years.
Thank you, Tim, and I'm Tim, too. I'm an alcoholic. 13 years and 4 days ago, I began step one, and in this spiritual kindergarten that we're all a part of continues to be my highest education. Thanks to our common welfare, my personal recovery has been possible. And to each of you who have shared or who will share what you were like, what happened, and what your life is like now, today, I thank you, especially Michelle tonight. What a great story. I appreciate you. Thanks.
Thank you, Tim. And I know we have another birthday, and tonight is Tinsley's birthday. He is an amazing guy. Talk about service. He's one of the busiest guys in his profession, one of the busiest guys I know of anywhere, and yet totally devoted to this program and works with people. He works with me. He's done a lot of work with me through the year and put up with me, and I really appreciate him so much, what he means to me, what he means to this meeting, and I believe it's 21 years for Tinsley, so Tinsley, congratulations.
Thanks, Tim. My name is Tinsley. I'm an alcoholic. And
hey, Tinsley.
I just continue to do the stuff that I've done since the beginning. Go to a lot of meetings. I miss the real meetings, but these are kind of cool, too, because I can go in my PJs if I want. I can go in my nighttime PJs or my daytime PJs. So that's kind of cool, too, and I have a sponsor, and I sponsor people, and work the steps, apply them to my life, got a prayer life, I never had that before, and work with others, and continue to do this stuff, and I would have thought it was a miracle that I didn't drink, but it's an even bigger miracle that I don't want to drink, and that's the magic of this thing. Thanks.
Thank you, Tinsley. And thank you, Tim. Anybody else want to reconsider on a white chip? Okay, Michelle, thanks for your story. And real quick, it was great to hear you mention Grace. Grace gave me my white chip over 17 years ago. So always great to hear her referenced in a meeting. So congratulations to everybody. Thank God for the chips we hold.
Thank you, Tim. One thing about Tinsley told his story at the Monday Night Blue Chip speaker meeting, I think my second week in sobriety. And I was always a big fan of Tinsley's. I just couldn't believe it. I said, this might be okay. This worst things could be happening to me right now. And he autographed a CD I just bought at Best Buy in the lobby at NAVA. And that was the biggest thrill I'd had in a long time. Thanks for being my friend, Tinsley.
Truly hit it. too, but in some way strange to me. As I rode from town to town, can't put the bottle down. Right now feels like it's killing me. Life out here gets so depressing. Need something to take the edge, you see. It's the Bible, the book, or the gun for me. Seems like everyone's out to get me. Trouble always following me. Feeling like I just can't outrun. Demons that